Hampshire Public Radio News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. While candidates spend a lot of time talking about the issues, like healthcare or education or energy, their campaigns spend a lot of time and money on psychological factors that influence voting. Messages are field tested to see how certain words resonate with certain groups of people. Also, how a candidate looks and speaks matters, along with intangible qualities such as likability and trustworthiness. Yet despite all the messaging, there are still some Granite Staters, one day out, who still have not made up their minds who to vote for. According to numbers released last night by the UNH Survey Center, 10% of New Hampshire 1st District voters are undecided, along with 9% in the 2nd District. In the governor's race also, 9% of those polled said they still weren't sure. And so today in The Exchange, we try to help you out as we attempt to answer your final questions before Election Day. So let's hear from you. If you're undecided in any of these contests, for Congress, governor, or president, what information might help you make that choice? Do you still have a question you want answered concerning these races? And what issues do you think were largely ignored or barely discussed that you wanted to hear more about? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org is the address. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We have four guests for the hour with us in studio. Josh Rogers, State House reporter for us at NHPR. Josh, good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Dante Scala, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNH. Dante, thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
And Chris Galdieri, Assistant Professor of Politics at St. Anselm College with a specialty in presidential politics. Chris, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here, Laura.
And Jonathan Van Fleet is here, Managing Editor at the Telegraph of Nashua and member of the PolitiFact New Hampshire website. And Jonathan, busy times. Thank you for your time as well.
You're welcome.
Well, and all of you, but I think to you first, Dante, undecided voters in the presidential race, it's a lot smaller than in the congressional races, just about 3% based on everything I saw over the weekend. But in the congressional and governor's races, it's a lot bigger, Dante, 10% in the 1st district, 9% for the 2nd district and for the governor's race. One day out, does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me too much for two reasons. One is the typical profile of undeclared voters or voters who don't know right now, even now, they tend not to fit the partisan mold very well. And coupled with that, they don't tend to have a high level of knowledge about politics. So, you know, there are people, you know, you would think that with all the ads and so forth and all the information out there that everyone would have made up their mind by now. But for those voters in particular, it's as if they're watching with the sound turned down.
Wow.
And that's especially true when you're looking at lower profile races. I mean, sure, at this point, you'd think everyone would have an opinion about the president. But in the governor's race, congressional races, you know, it's been tough for those races, especially in New Hampshire, to get their share of attention with the presidential race basically blanketing the airwaves and blanketing the coverage. So it's tougher for, say, a Frank Ginta or a Carol Shea Porter or a Maggie Hassan or Over the LaMontagne to get his voice out there with so much noise in the air.
You know, that's a really good point with New Hampshire, a contested battleground state, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama dropping by, you know, every other day, it seems. So, Josh, have you met any undecided voters as you go out and cover these campaigns, especially the governor's race?
Well, not typically when I'm out covering campaigns. I mean, you might meet them. I like to chat people up in the line at the grocery store, the liquor store or something and say, you know, if there's an opportunity just to get a sense of, you know, random voters, like what they're thinking about. And certainly sometimes in non-political contexts, you meet people who, you know, as Dante suggests, are more or less uninformed or not terribly well informed. But you don't when you're out at rallies. I mean, I was out when President Obama and former President Clinton were in Concord yesterday, and you know there were, you know, apparently 17,000 people there. You know, those people, some are going out for the spectacle, but most of those people have made up their mind. And in the lower races, it's been hard to break through because the presidential race has been so competitive here. And also, just as a member of the media, there's only so much, you know, time, column inches, et cetera, in the day, and so it's been hard It's been hard to give all the individual races the attention they might warrant in a non-presidential year.
Even though the governor's race in particular, Josh, has held what may be an unprecedented number of debates. I mean, if people wanted to know where Ovid LaMontagne and Maggie Hassan stood, they had huge access to these candidates. I can't even count how many debates or forums they held.
Well, I think there were 12 debates and, you know, another handful of forums. That's true, but as somebody who had to sit through a lot of those, it's also true that the candidates weren't necessarily doing the best job at breaking through, you know, the fundamental argument in this race, which was from Republicans, oh, elect Maggie Hassan and maybe your taxes are going to go up, and from Democrats, elect Ovid LaMontagne and there's going to be a lot of change on social issues. So, that's sort of been the narrative when that race began, and it certainly seems like it's that going out.
Well, and a little bit more, if we could, on how people make this choice. And what do you think, Chris Galdieri, you first, how much do the issues matter, and how much is it more, you know, that guy or gal looks more trustworthy than the other guy or gal?
Well, I think issues matter, but it's not necessarily that the same issues matter from year to year to year so much as that it depends on what the times are like. If you look back to presidential elections in 2004, everyone was focused on national security because 9/11 was very fresh in everyone's memories. You had the war in Iraq going on. 4 years later, you had virtually no mention of foreign policy because the economy had imploded, and so people were much more worried about those sorts of bread and butter issues, and that's what's dominated in 2010 as well. In 2012, we've seen those same economic issues continue to play a part, but we've also seen a move towards more emphasis on social issues. At the Clinton-Obama event yesterday, for instance, you heard reference after reference after reference to issues like abortion, issues like contraception, issues like gay rights. And those were things that weren't necessarily on the agenda 2 years ago, but have been after the governance of the last 2 years that we've seen from Republicans all over the country.
And in New Hampshire especially, I think,
yes,
was the message that they were making.
Yes, in particular.
Well, and Jonathan Van Fleet, you're all about the issues. You're a fact checker with PolitiFact as well as managing editor at the Telegraph of Nashua. What do you think? How much do the issues matter? How much is, you know, one person's stance on immigration or, you know, international trade going to affect the way somebody votes?
I think there's been such a blizzard of information that people kind of get lost on some of these things. They almost tune out. As Dante was saying, they're listening with this or they're watching with the sound off. I think that's pretty apt. Actually, they're choosing to ignore some of this stuff because there's so much of it. They don't know what to believe. They don't know what to reject. I have an 8-year-old kid who said to me the other day, all Barack Obama does is lie about Mitt Romney, and all Mitt Romney does is lie about Barack Obama. So they talk about politics a little bit at elementary school, but that is the way he sums it up. And if I was going to rate him, I'd give him probably a mostly false because that's not exactly true. But, you know, there is some truth to that. Here in New Hampshire, we use the Truth-O-Meter and we've rated a number of political statements. And if you look at the mostly false, the pants on fire range, we've got far more falsehoods than the upper end, which is the half true to the true range. So really there's been a lot of distortions, and I think people get sick of that and start tuning out.
Well, and I definitely want to present that to our listeners. You know, if there's issues that keep coming up that you're not sure where the truth may be, or if there are unexplored matters that you haven't heard talked about enough this campaign season, let's hear from you. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We're taking your last-minute questions before Tuesday's elections. And again, we want to hear from you this hour. And Dante Scala, before we go to our listeners, I'd love your thoughts also on what Jonathan said. And Jonathan, I can't help but agree, a blizzard of information, really hard to figure out, you know, truth from fiction.
For sure. It's for voters who are truly undecided, they're probably looking at both candidates and saying, you know, neither one quite fits where I am. And so, like Lynn Vavreck out at UCLA has done some interesting research on undecided voters. And, you know, basically they're not completely uninformed, but their positions actually might be a little more flexible than what they're seeing in either from either of the major parties. So that's one more reason why they might say, but you know, besides the distortions and so forth, one reason they might be hedging a bit at this point, because they don't feel as if in this increasingly polarized political environment where both parties cater a bit more to the extremes than to the middle, they see themselves, better or worse, as centrists. And so they're a little out of place, don't feel at home quite in either party.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen. And again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Duncan's calling in from Portsmouth. Hi, Duncan. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Go ahead, Duncan.
My question, I guess, was I haven't heard Guantanamo discussed at all, even in the past 4 years. Is that something that, you know, could go one way or the other?
You know, Duncan, that's a great question. And Chris Galdieri, when Barack Obama ran in 2008, closing Guantanamo, where political terrorist suspects are held, was a big priority, he said.
It was. And it was. And talking about that was something that really helped him, particularly in his race for the Democratic nomination. But what happened when candidate Obama became President Obama is that he ran into a lot of opposition in Congress, and he was unable to get Guantanamo Bay closed. And so now we have a situation where it's not in anyone's interest to talk about that fact. The president doesn't want to remind voters that he really wanted to close Guantanamo and couldn't. And many Republicans are all in favor of having Guantanamo be there. In 2008, Mitt Romney said he'd like to double the size of Guantanamo. So he doesn't want to bring attention to that fact either.
Yeah, not worth talking about then. But it was a big issue 4 years ago.
It was, and it still is an issue. But there's no one who's got any reason to talk about it.
Well, Duncan, thanks for the call. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Here's a question for you, Josh Rogers, from someone who emailed, doesn't want his or her name used. How does each gubernatorial candidate plan to work with Bill O'Brien?
Well, that's a question that's been put to them in the debates. And obviously, the Democratic strategy across the board in New Hampshire has been to highlight what they believe are the unpopular policies, the unpopular leadership style of the House Speaker. Ovid LaMontagne, meanwhile, has, you know, variously said, you know, he admires Bill O'Brien, but that he would, you know, be a different sort of fellow. So I think that, you know, everybody's going to come into the race and Maggie Hassan says she'll work with him if she's in there. We don't know what's going to happen with Speaker O'Brien, though. He has a reelection, and if he's reelected, depending on the margin, you know, he may or may not be a speaker. But
okay. That
he's certainly been a big figure in this race at the state level.
All right. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more on the final information you need before Election Day on The Exchange on NHPR, then at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. More on casting your vote in the 2012 election. Are you enjoying the conversation you're hearing on NHPR? Well, great programs like The Exchange are made possible with the financial help of our listeners. And now it's even easier to make a donation to your favorite public radio service. Every time you text NHPR to 85944, a $10 donation will appear on your next phone bill. Just text NHPR to 85944 and thanks. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and the New Hampshire Institute of Politics and Political Library at St. Anselm College, New Hampshire's home for politics, online at anselm.edu/NHIOP. And Collins Dentistry for Children, treating the dental needs of infants through teens in southern New Hampshire, with locations in Nashua and Pelham. Details at collinsdentistry.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a last chance to address questions about this year's elections, including those underreported issues of the 2012 political season. If you are still an undecided voter, what do you need to know that'll help you make your decision? While most Granite Staters have made their choice, new numbers do show that there's still about 10 or 9% undecided in New Hampshire's races for Congress and governor. If that's you, give us a call. Maybe we can give you that final answer that you need. If you have already decided, what issues do you think should have been better covered or more discussed by the campaigns in this year's elections? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, let's go right back to our listeners. And Mary's calling in from Tamworth. Hi, Mary. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Laura. I've been canvassing undecided voters for about the last 2 weeks in Tamworth and Sandwich and Conway and North Conway. And to a man, practically, and woman, they complain about the ads. They hate the ads. And they've just turned them off the campaign. And I try to explain to all of them that the reason these ads are there in such volume and so darkly is the Citizens United ruling in 2010 that allowed all this money to come into politics, our politics. And the four justices, the five justices who approved that ruling were all Republican appointees starting from Reagan up through the two Bushes. But the dissenter in that case was also a Republican appointee. He was an appointee of Gerald Ford.
So you're saying that the blizzard of ads, as Jonathan Van Fleet put it, is causing undecided voters to just feel utterly confused, Mary?
Yes, confused and discouraged and disheartened.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that. I'm really glad she brought this up. Jonathan, you talked about this before, but a little more from you and then all of you guys, I think. I have to say, just as a journalist trying to sort through all this stuff, it has been very frustrating, Jonathan. There's a study and a counter study and a counter study to that counter study, and you just almost want to throw up your hands and say, I can't figure this out.
Mm-hmm. It's true. So when we approach some of these statements, the typical formula is there's a kernel of truth somewhere, and then they will spin it to either blame someone or take some credit. So typical fact check is they're right on the numbers, wrong on the blame, half true. Then it kind of takes some of these other things, like Maggie Hassan pays no taxes on her home. We got a whole mess of emails, people saying, is this true? I don't know what to think. What's the deal? And you look at the reality. So yeah, it's true. She doesn't pay taxes, but she doesn't own the home. Her husband is principal of Phillips Exeter Academy and is required to live there. So is that true? No, it's, you know, we wound up rating that mostly false. So these distortions, I think people hear it, they're trying to figure it out, and then when they realize that their legs being pulled, they start tuning out.
Interesting. What do you think, Chris? I want to hear from everybody on this one, because it has been a very difficult year for the facts.
It has. And I think an added complication is that thanks to the rise of super PACs this year, is you have a lot of organizations putting up ads, and they don't feel bound by any of the traditional lines that a normal campaign might be. There are things that Barack Obama doesn't want to say about Mitt Romney. There are things that Ovid LaMontagne doesn't want to say about Maggie Hassan. But some, you know, mysterious group with the names like Americans for an American America can just, you know, come in, cross those lines, obliterate those lines. And if you're someone watching at home, even with the sound turned down, I think it's really, really off-putting.
Yeah, and they talked about that in Morning Edition this morning, actually, that in some sense, the campaigns are losing hold of the message.
That's right. And I think that's why these things are sort of a double-edged sword for candidates, because there are things you don't want to say, or there are issues you want to focus on, and a super PAC run by, a billionaire with an axe to grind doesn't necessarily care what your message is.
Dante, how hard has it been for you? You're a veteran of a lot of campaigns. How hard has it been for you to figure out what's real and what isn't?
I would say no less so than in previous campaigns.
Really?
I'm a little skeptical that super PACs have changed the tenor of political speech, or the truthiness, so to speak, of political speech. I think you can trace distortions back a long way before super PACs arrived.
Yellow journalism back in another century.
I mean, I think when all is said and done, if you look at Obama and associated super PACs, mostly the Obama campaign versus Romney and allied super PACs, we've seen a rough balance in terms of the amount of money spent on political speech. So I don't know that, you know, it'll be interesting to look back and see whether, was there much influence? Did super PACs really influence this election very much? But look, Mary's point, though, with all these ads up on the air,
right, Mary, talking about undecided voters being disgusted.
Is it the case that a neighbor going to talk to neighbors and canvassing person to person, is that what makes a difference at this point? Like, I was talking to a canvasser yesterday in my neighborhood when I was out raking leaves, and he came up, was talking to me, and said, you know, what are you deciding? Well, I'm undecided right now. Well, let me tell you what I think. And he gave me this 5-minute speech about why he supported his candidate. When all is said and done, does that have more effect, that very low-dollar interaction,
right,
as opposed to super PAC billionaire spending lots of money?
And I think this year, perhaps, maybe it's because New Hampshire is such a battleground state, boy, canvassers are all over the place. I mean, I can't count how many times they've come to our door. Josh, what about this idea, either Mary's point that undecided voters are undecided because they're just so frustrated by the blizzard of information, or on your ability as a reporter to figure out what the real issues are, what the real facts are on the ground.
Well, I can understand the frustration with the ads. I mean, one thing that is interesting, at least in the governor's race this year, is I can never recall a governor's race where the spending by outside groups so dwarfed what the candidates themselves could spend. But, you know, to Dante's point, while the candidates may want to walk away from some of those ads, and they're not allowed to coordinate with the affiliate groups, most of the time these ads do mirror, at least they have in the governor's race, have mirrored the themes that the candidates have been hitting. Certainly sorting it out as a voter can be difficult, but to the point on whether or not a one-on-one interaction, I was out over the weekend observing some canvassing by the Obama folks, and certainly their closing argument is predicated on, you know, the one-to-one meeting between, you know, neighbors, although a lot of the people I was following around actually driven up from Massachusetts to do it, is more effective. And, you know, their closing argument has been essentially using kind of normative pressure and shame, asking people, you know, what time are you going to vote, rather than will you vote?
That was the first time I got asked that. What time are you going to vote?
And did you know your neighbors are going to be voting? And, you know, and then also mailers from other groups, like a voter report card saying, you know, you have a high participation rate. You know, this is public information. Don't you want to continue to get a good grade, kind of thing? And so all of that stuff is thick this year.
Dante and Chris, real quick, and then back to our callers.
Yeah, I saw a mail piece that went exactly along those lines, and it said, you have voted – it was a mail piece that showed you have voted this much. Your neighborhood votes this much, and you're a little below average. So what are you going to do on election day?
Wow, that's new.
That's new.
Chris?
I got a very bad grade on that mailer because I've only lived in New Hampshire for a year and I've only voted in three elections here.
Well, with a proper attitude, I'm sure you can bring that.
I hope so.
Our number again is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. By the way, Mary, our caller, said all Republican appointees were responsible for the Citizens United decision. Breyer was a Republican appointee, Justice Stephen Breyer, and he was not among those who voted for Citizens.
He was a Democrat appointee.
Oh, he was a Democratic appointee. Okay. All right. See, Mary, it's hard to keep track of everything these days. Thanks a lot for the call, Mary. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Waiting in Plastow is Dylan. Hi, Dylan. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for taking my call. My question is basically, through my point of view, through the whole all of the elections, I haven't heard much talk of the war on drugs. I believe in the presidential debate on foreign policy, it was mentioned zero time. I'm just wondering if I can get kind of a short answer on what the candidates might do to shrink the size of the federal government in way of maybe reducing the amount of persecutions that the DEA do, reduce the size of our prisons, things like that.
All right. And Dylan, that has been an issue in past elections, I remember. Not a huge issue, but definitely been out there. Anybody hearing anyone wade into that sort of tricky political water? Dante?
Well, I mean, not at the presidential level. I mean, I don't think you hear that from either Barack Obama or Mitt Romney. And I suspect that, you know, their positions aren't that much different on these sorts of issues. I think where the action is happening regarding drug policy is at the state level in terms of referenda and so forth. And I think that, again, that's something else that tends to get blanketed in a national presidential campaign. But it's the states right now that are thinking about issues like medical marijuana and
right.
so forth.
Actually, I saw a map of the United States, exactly. And more states are going in that direction. Well, so it is out there.
In the governor's race, for instance, both candidates, major candidates, and John Babiarz, too, the Libertarian, they're all game to contemplate medical marijuana
in a way that
Governor Lynch, snuffed that out, so to speak, every time it came up.
Yeah. Chris, real quick?
I think the only presidential candidate talking about drugs really is Gary Johnson, the Libertarian nominee. And there are some Democrats who are worried that could hurt the president in Colorado, where I believe there is a referendum on marijuana decriminalization, and think that would bring out people who want to decriminalize, and then they might vote for Johnson rather than Obama.
Okay. Well, Dylan, thanks a lot for the call. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the exchange page at nhpr.org. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Jonathan, I'm interested in how you go about deciding what facts to fact check at PolitiFact New Hampshire. Do you respond to requests from readers at the Telegraph of Nashua? Do you respond to sort of the biggest potential whoppers there in the campaign? How do you decide what to dig into and what to leave alone?
We do both. We're people too, so we hear this stuff. We are subject to listening to the ads, watching television, seeing these things. So we also use curiosity as our guide. Things that make us go, I wonder if that's true. We tend to focus on that. It's not a lot of, you know, we hope work is, there's an element of fun to it. So it's not a lot of fun to check something where you already know, oh, that's true, oh, that's false. So we kind of go for things that I wonder what's the answer there. So we also do take reader requests, emails, stuff like that. And so we give those a very high priority.
And what issues seem to really have gotten people going this year, Jonathan? What are you repeatedly getting requests to? Boy, this really bugs me. Boy, this would help me decide. What is this issue all about?
We got a bunch on the governor's race, as a matter of fact. And early on, we've been doing this since June. We focused a lot on the congressional races. We figured that's where the action was. We focused a lot on the presidential race because there were so many visits here. And there, the senators, Ayotte and Shaheen, they were acting as surrogates for the party. We thought that's where people wanted to go. And as it turned out, people really wanted to know about the governor's race. Specifically, you know, did Maggie Hassan vote 33 times to increase fees and taxes? Does Ovid LaMontagne really want to eliminate kindergarten? Stuff like this. And, you know, we went there and we checked it out. And as I had said, most of those things, there's an element of truth. There's a little kernel there, but there are overall distortions.
And if people do want to check out some of the stuff that you're mentioning now, Jonathan, it's politifactnh.org, something like that?
Politifactnh.com.
.com. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to our listeners. And Jason's waiting in Durham. Hi, Jason. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Jason. Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, Jason. Hi.
Hi. I was looking at the ballot, and there are three constitutional amendment questions at the bottom. The only one I've heard any discussion of is the one against prohibiting an income tax. But generally, I was curious, how do these questions feed into the process of amending the state constitution? And then number two, could you talk about the two other questions, one about the courts and one about holding a convention to amend the Constitution?
Right, a constitutional convention, should we hold another one? It's a great question, Jason. And just to let you know, we did cover two of these, the income tax amendment and the judicial question amendment, sometime in mid-October. So you can go online and check those out, Jason. But anybody here, those will be on the ballot. He's right. And they haven't gotten as much play. We've done some reporting and some shows. But Josh, really, these have gotten lost in the sauce this year, haven't they?
I think so. And it's a high threshold. And so,
67%.
And in a presidential year, I think it may be tough. I mean, the income tax prohibition would be, it seeks to prohibit in the Constitution, you know, tax on personal income. And the judicial rules amendment would be one that would give the legislature concurrent oversight over judicial rules. And, you know, depending on how you look at it, that would be a big deal. And this has been a long simmering sort of turf war between the legislature and the judiciary. It's not the first time this sort of thing's been proposed.
Yeah, there was a similar question in the early 2000s that almost made it. But not quite. So what about that third question, Dante, of should New Hampshire hold a constitutional convention? That's also on the ballot this time.
Yeah, it's – I mean, again, that's even
– way down the ticket, but it's still there.
Yeah, and so that's – I mean, again, difficult to see. I think voters approach these referenda with caution. And again, keep in mind, you're a voter – you know something about politics. You've been maybe even following the high profile races, and then you all of a sudden you get down ticket, and you're five minutes into this, and you're all of a sudden you're into this thicket where you have to read this very long statement about, you know, what's going to be done and what does it mean to vote yes, what does it mean to vote no is much less clear than, well, if I vote for Obama or if I vote for Romney. So, you know, in the city of Manchester, for example, we're having a city charter commission vote where, you know, we're going to elect people to take another look at the whole charter of the city, and that's on there too. So there are even local issues that, again, have gotten very little play compared to the blanket up at the top.
And NHPR did have a piece on that just this morning, but you're right. It's hard to dig into those down-ticket issues. Let's take another call. This is Jackie in Lancaster. Hi, Jackie. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. Thanks. I'm just wondering how the different presidential candidates are looking at the theory of the super PACs and if they plan to do anything about them because they seem pretty out of control.
All right. Well, I'll throw that to you, Chris Galdieri. You're our presidential political follower.
I think Governor Romney probably does not have much of a problem with super PACs. They were really key to him defeating a lot of his opponents in the Republican nomination battle earlier this year. The president has gone on record supporting various options that would seek to rein in or at least require disclosure of donations to super PACs, but those did not pass back when the Democrats had a majority in Congress, and I think it's really unlikely that they'd make it through the current one.
Dante?
Yeah, I mean, that connects to a larger issue, though, which is the Supreme Court itself, which rendered that Citizens United decision. There are four of the nine Supreme Court justices currently sitting are 74 years old and older. So it's highly possible that the next president will get at least one new Supreme Court justice to choose, maybe more. And whoever chooses and who they're replacing could make a big difference, not only in Citizens United and campaign finance, but also Roe v. Wade, for example. And that's an issue that really hasn't gotten much play in presidential debates and so forth.
You know, that's a good point, Dante. And in past elections, maybe when the economy wasn't such a big issue, I remember people saying, you know, don't vote for so-and-so because, you know, who knows who he'll appoint to the Supreme Court. That was a big issue.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, it might be something of a sleeper issue, but it's not getting the amount of play that it would. I agree.
Quickly, Chris, yeah?
Yeah, and another thing that no one's talking about with regards to the courts is there are dozens and dozens of vacancies on the lower federal court benches that the president hasn't shown a lot of interest in filling. So either that will be a tremendous opportunity for President Romney, or that's something that President Obama might choose to focus on if the Republicans keep control of the House of Representatives, but the Democrats retain control of the Senate and do some sort of reform to the filibuster.
All right. Well, thanks for that question. And we'll take a lot more of your questions after a short break. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Again, if you're an undecided voter, what do you still need to know? Most people have made their choices, but there's about 9 or 10% of Granite Staters who haven't yet picked who they'll vote for on Election Day. So if you're one of them, join us at 1-800-892-6477.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Antioch University, New England, offering an MBA in sustainability with weekend accelerated 1-year or 2-year options. Information at antiochne.edu. And Goff Wilson, a global immigration law firm helping businesses and individuals achieve successful immigration solutions, online at goffwilson.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
NHPR's Leadership Circle helps to provide a stable base of support for news and information in New Hampshire. I'm Betsy Gardella, president of NHPR and a member of the Leadership Circle. Circle members are, of course, listeners and fans of this service, but with federal funding of public media in a constant state of flux, their individual contributions of $100 a month provide resources we can count on. To find out more about joining the Leadership Circle, visit nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the Constitution and what our nation's founding document says and doesn't say about voting. Email us your questions at exchange@nhpr.org before the program, and then join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today, we're taking your last-minute questions before tomorrow's elections. If you've already decided what issues should have been better discussed or more covered in this year's campaigns, if you're still undecided, what's that one piece of information that you need that might help you make a choice? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. And gentlemen, right back to our listeners. Erin's calling from Deering. Hi, Erin. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much. So I'm actually a supporter of Obama currently, but I was a little upset because he came out with in support of same-sex marriage, and then I didn't really hear about it at all again after that at the debates or anything. So I guess I'm wondering why that is.
Why Obama's not talking more about same-sex marriage?
Yeah, why anybody isn't, really.
Yeah, and are you a supporter of that or an opponent, Aaron?
I'm an opponent. I'm a supporter of gay marriage.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks for the call. And this has come up, Josh Rogers, in the race for governor. In our congressional races, not so much.
I mean, it has come up a bit. I mean, I think it certainly has come up. You know, Maggie Hassan was instrumental in writing the law that Governor Lynch ultimately signed, allowing same-sex couples to marry in New Hampshire. Ovid LaMontagne has been a critic of that law, not so much on the campaign trail, but, you know, when Republicans were considering a repeal of that earlier in the year, you know, he spoke at a rally outside the state house along with House Speaker O'Brien that, you know, standing in front of a big flag that said marriage, one man, one woman, naturally. He's toned that down a bit on the campaign trail, but he would certainly sign a repeal if it reached his desk. There certainly has been some talk on the presidential level. I mean, certainly as a candidate, candidate Obama 4 years ago certainly, you know, said that he was, you know, favored traditional marriage, so to speak, then, but, you know, indicated that he would be open-minded about it. And then when he got rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that's something that rallied a lot in the same-sex marriage-supporting community to his side. And you have heard that on the campaign trail about allowing any two people, you know, who love each other to get married. That's been a feature of President Obama's most recent visits. I remember particularly in Nashville a couple of weeks ago, that was part of the close where he said, you know, we all need to come together. And he sort of ticked off various constituencies that he's hoping to galvanize. And he made mention of that. So he has spoken about that.
Dante?
Yeah, two things are striking. One is that if you had told a panel, say back in 2004, that a president was going to switch his position on same-sex marriage, and that the opposing party would respond by saying virtually nothing about that switch, I think we'd all have been surprised 8 years ago. But that's essentially what's happened. I mean,
the landscape has changed.
Exactly. And I think Republicans at this point are trying to figure out how to navigate what, as far as public opinion goes, I mean, this has been a rapid switch in public opinion regarding gay marriage. So that's the first point. Second point is, again, often it's the case that the presidential politics are the last to change when it comes to public policy, and states are the first to innovate. So if we look, you know, residents of Maine, for example, Washington, Maryland, and Minnesota are all considering gay marriage on their tickets in their particular states this cycle.
We talked earlier about some of the issues that haven't gotten enough play. We got a caller asking about the war on drugs. We got somebody calling about Guantanamo. Here's one, Chris Galdieri, that has just come up in the waning days. I mean, literally in the last days of this campaign. And that's climate change. All of a sudden, given Superstorm Sandy, everybody's talking about it and saying, why haven't the presidential candidates and the congressional candidates been talking about it?
That's right. And the problem on the presidential level is that it's sort of become an article of faith among Republicans that climate change either doesn't exist or that if it is happening, it's happening because of entirely natural phenomenon that people don't influence whatsoever. The problem for the president is that while he's come out in favor of legislation and other measures that would help mitigate climate change, he wasn't able to get them through Congress in his first 2 years, and a Congress with a Tea Party-dominated House of Representatives isn't likely to take it up on their own. And so he's, you know, left to flog things that he can do more or less on his own in the executive branch, like increasing gas mileage. But they're all sort of these, you know, they're workarounds. They're hacks and kludges. They're not really, you know, policies that are aimed at directly impacting climate change.
Well, and here's the other thing, too, that's been talked about, Chris, and I'd love your thoughts, is that President Obama might want to talk a little more about climate change, but in this year's hyper-focused battleground state, we're not talking national elections anymore. We seem to be talking about, you know, 7 to 10 states. A lot of those are coal states, and he doesn't want to alienate coal states.
That's right. The last thing he wants to do is alienate voters in Pennsylvania and Ohio, places that he desperately needs if he's going to be reelected.
All right. Well, again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Another issue, guys, that again has come up a lot in past elections, and Josh, not so much this time around, is guns. Came up a little bit in the governor's race, but almost nothing in the congressional races. What do you think there?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I think that the decisions by the court have sort of taken some of the policymaking, you know, sort of taken that off the table, at least, you know, conceptually for a lot of these candidates. And, you know, at the state level, the state house level, guns have been, you know, kind of front and center in some of the actions of the Republican-controlled legislature over the last 2 years. But, you know, people in New Hampshire like their guns. The Second Amendment, you know, is there. And I think it's a sensitive issue. And so I think that, you know, you're going to alienate as many people as you draw. And so I think a lot of them have tried to sort of steer towards terrain that they feel they've got a better handle on how the public's going to react.
So why talk about it? In other words, it's just trouble.
Well, I you know, there hasn't been a great deal of stress on that. And I mean, I think part of that, you know, you look at the state races, there's, you know, perceived to be a gender gap. And while there are certainly plenty of women who like to shoot, the Democrats are, you know, they're strong among women and sort of trying to pick up male voters. And so, you know, and I mean, there just hasn't been a lot of talk on it.
Go ahead, Dante. And then I got another question for you, Jonathan. Yeah.
Well, we just talked about how, you know, Republicans have been rather silent on gay marriage at the national level. I think for Democrats, that issue is gun control. Democrats, with few exceptions, and the president is not one of those exceptions, have abstained from discussing gun control at a national level, even in the wake of mass shootings like the one that took place in Colorado. It's as if it never happened from a public policy perspective.
I want to ask all of you about a couple more undiscussed or under-discussed issues. But the Federal Reserve, I think, Dante, you were saying earlier, no one's talking about the Federal Reserve's role. That was talked a lot about in the Republican primary with Ron Paul there, and other candidates would sort of echo what Mr. Paul was saying, Congressman Paul. But now you don't hear anything about that.
Yeah, I believe it's the case that, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, Mitt Romney said that basically he would not be in favor of, say, renewing Ben Bernanke. And I think Romney focused his attention on the head of the Federal Reserve. But it's been somewhat of a dilution of what Ron Paul had to say about the Federal Reserve. But certainly, I think the action could be seen in Congress. I mean, if there's a Republican House majority in Congress next year, there may be more talk about the Fed.
And gentlemen, we've been talking about, you know, again, questions that haven't gotten that much play. I want to flip now and to you, Jonathan Van Fleet, ask about questions that have gotten lots of play, but it's still unclear where the truth is. Have you looked into this Medicare $700 billion argument, the idea that President Obama is stealing, to use Governor Romney's words, $700 billion from Medicare to pay for what he calls Obamacare? This has been, boy, a feature of every single presidential election. At least half the ads you see out there seem to talk about this in the congressional race. Have you dug into that?
Absolutely. And you want to talk about something that people, they've heard so much of, they don't even know what's up or down any longer. So the statement, it's been repeated over and over again, that someone either wants to cut $700 billion from Medicare or rob or steal. And so the typical fact check along this line goes something like this. They proposed a reduction of Medicare, which would have saved about $700 billion. Is that a cut? Isn't that a cut? Well, you know, you be the judge on that. However, they often leave out the fact that Ryan's own plan,
Congressman Ryan, the
exactly,
VP nominee.
Yep,
yeah,
exactly. He had accounted for the same savings in his own plan. So it's a little hypocritical to use that against Democrats. And then furthermore, when they use the word rob or steal, it really puts it over the top. So if they say someone wanted to cut Medicare $700 billion, that's a half true. If they say they want to rob or steal, that's a mostly false
And that's, we've been pretty consistent on that.
And I'm guessing you've gotten lots of emails and calls from folks on that. That's been out there a lot.
A fair amount. I think that's one of those issues where we gravitated to it very quickly because we kept hearing it, and then people got sick of it.
Here's another one. And again, to you first, Jonathan, but I want to hear from others, too. The charge now from the Obama camp is that, quote, Mitt Romney is Bush 2.0, that he'd, quote, return us to those same policies that got our economy into trouble in the first place. That seems to be a pretty wide statement. What are your fact-check thoughts on that?
Well, we haven't checked that specifically. So I would tend to defer on that one.
Yeah. Well, I've got something from the Wall Street Journal actually says, Mr. Obama constantly tells his supporters that Mitt Romney wants us to double down on trickle down, explicitly saying that Mr. Romney's economic proposals are identical to the ones that caused the Great Recession. Wall Street Journal says that's a distortion of Mr. Romney's views and of history. Dante Scala, I wonder if you have any thoughts on that broad statement by Mr. Obama.
Certainly one issue that's been present and does draw a clear marker between Obama and Romney is the fate of the Bush tax cuts, which are going to be determined in the next couple months, during the lame duck session of Congress. And there's a clear contrast where the president says, well, we can save the Bush tax cuts, but only up to a certain income level, and those above that are going to go back to the Clinton tax rates, whereas Romney says, no, the Bush tax cuts should stay for all. So that's one example. You can look at foreign policy, and that's a little bit more muddled. I mean, you can question about, who Romney's advisors are, although Mitt Romney, during the third presidential debate, made some clear demarcations between what his foreign policy might look like and what Bush's foreign policy looked like.
Yeah, so more similarities there than perhaps meets the eye? Well, or how would you rate this if you were a fact checker, I guess?
I would give it a half at best, I think. But there are some clear distinctions there.
We haven't heard from him lately, but I mean, during the primary, I mean, I guess we heard it from most of the Republicans, a real disdain for the Dodd-Frank financial overhaul, and that, Romney has suggested, we need to get rid of it. And then it was like, oh, well, what parts of it? And we've sort of lost that. But I mean, certainly he has looked at undoing a lot of regulation. He also used to talk a lot about having a regulatory cap. We haven't heard that much lately. But so there's something to the argument, but obviously it's political season. It's always going to be broad strokes that may not be entirely accurate. It's not shocking.
Chris, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, and just in terms of tying Romney to George Bush, I mean, George Bush is widely regarded at this point as a not terribly successful president, not very highly regarded by a lot of folks in the public. And I think when that happens to you, people run against you for a long time. And you still hear Republicans talking about Jimmy Carter in 1992. Tom Harkin ran for president. It sounded like he was running against Herbert Hoover. I think it's just one of those truthy things that happens in politics.
Here's an email from Joe who says, my question is as follows. I have a younger brother who's currently a student at Keene State College. He told me that Romney is going to cut all Pell Grants, which would make it impossible for him to continue through his college degree. He also told me that the current president has promised to continue funding Pell Grants, which is the only way he can make it through college. Joe says, prior to hearing this, I was a Romney supporter. Does your panel have any insight on this and whether or not it's true? Hey, Joe, that's a good question. Have you looked into this, Jonathan, the Pell Grant issue?
Well, Romney's statements have been pretty clear that he feels that there should be less federal aid for college students. But he's also focused on what he said is the economy. In one of his speeches, he said half of the college graduates are either unemployed or underemployed. And that's an accurate statement. I mean, he was right on that.
Yeah. Well, and there's one more question that I almost hate to ask, but I'll ask it anyway. Dante, I'm going to throw this one to you first. Is anybody talking about, and I'm not talking about the campaigns, but just more broadly, what's the process if we get into an electoral college tie? This is beyond the issues, but what happens if we all wake up on Wednesday morning and it's an electoral college tie?
Well, then it goes to the Congress. A tie is decided specifically in the House of Representatives, and it would not be the current residents in the House of Representatives, but it would be the new Congress that gets to vote on who the next president would be.
Now, that's tough because some of those races may be still in flux. I mean, you're talking you know, a lot of people.
But each state, and also to make it further complicated, each state gets one vote. So, for example, the representatives of New Hampshire jointly get one vote. So it's one state, one vote. And whoever gets a majority of votes among the states as represented by the House of Representatives, that's who the next president would be. And in those forecasts, now it's widely expected that Republicans will keep the House of Representatives, regardless of what happens in the presidency. So that therefore, you could imagine a scenario where Republicans in the House of Representatives decide to elect President Romney in the event of a tie.
Wow. That's a huge deal, isn't it?
It would be.
So shades of 2000, are you expecting that?
No.
You're not expecting that?
No, I'm not expecting that.
Really? Because I've heard a lot of, you know, hand-wringing and hair-pulling about how, you know, what if it's undecided for weeks? And
I am not wringing my hands or pulling what's left of my hair over that.
Well, guys, I know it's a real busy season for you. I really appreciate all of you coming in. Josh, thank you very much for being
here.
You're
welcome, Lauren.
Josh Rogers, State House reporter for NHPR. Dante, thank you.
You're
also
welcome.
And we'll see you on election night tomorrow. Dante Scala, associate professor of political science at UNH. He tweets at Granite Prof. Chris Galdieri, always good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Always glad to be here.
Chris Galdieri, assistant professor of politics at St. Anselm College with a specialty in presidential politics. Jonathan Van Fleet, managing editor at the Telegraph of Nashua. Remember the PolitiFact New Hampshire website. Thank you. Your political fact-checking days are, you're going to get a little bit of a break from that from now on, I suppose.
I suppose. Thanks, Laura. It was
all right.
Fun.
Thanks for being here. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, constitutionally speaking, about voting. We look at what our nation's most important document says and doesn't say about elections. There's some debate over who should write the rules, the federal or state governments, also who exactly can cast a ballot, and if voting is a right or a privilege. We'll talk with those involved in a new civics program called Constitutionally Speaking. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 here on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 on NHPR, where support comes.